For more Red FM podcasts, go to redfm.ie/podcasts.
The country colder, unfortunately, though. The front page in this morning's Mirror calls it -7, the killer chiller. Ireland bracing itself for -7 temperatures, and the icy blast could last until next week. And they have photographs of captions of snow. Now, that's probably if it's going to happen, they say, further north of the country, up around Ulster and Connacht. Stay warm is a headline as well. The elderly and the vulnerable warned to keep the heating on, whatever the cost, as temperatures will hit -7. That's easy to say, whatever the cost, if somebody else was paying the bill. And of course, motorists are on red alert up the country as well. Interestingly, the front of the Echo today, and indeed both the Echo and the Examiner, drill into the safety of our streets and indeed our driving habits. We will see more Gardaí on the beat in Cork City Centre over the coming weeks, by day and by night. We had the Joint Policing Committee meeting yesterday, and some very good plans were come up with, to make Cork City a safer and more user-friendly, particularly over the Christmas period. So there'll be an increased amount of Gardaí patrolling the city centre as part of the policing plan for Christmas. Many would love it all year round, but they certainly apparently have put aside a lot more Garda hours for actual Garda presence on our streets up to Christmas time, by day and by night. So particularly 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. There'll be a dedicated police force in the city, they're saying. And they've also a covert unit that deals with, and I've seen this in operation actually myself in the city during the day. I mean, the city an awful lot more these days across lunchtime and what have you. And I see an awful lot of undercover activity, a lot of guard activity in that regard. So they will continue to deal with street drug activity, shoplifting, and interact with crime prevention officers in relation to all those kind of issues. So more personnel on duty. And they're also going to be dealing with the nighttime economy, where you should see more members of the Gardaí Síochána out and about at night, keeping people safe and keeping an eye on people who are acting the maggot, I suppose. So Christmas issues then that involve shoplifting also make the Echo today, because businesses are plagued from it. Not just shoplifting, but begging, public order offences, drug dealing, drug taking in the city centre. And the whole idea is hopefully will make the city a safer and more user-friendly place, according to the Gardaí Síochána. Kevin Hurley, who has a lot of businesses in the city, particularly with regards to Centra, says he's losing an awful lot of stock every week due to alcohol theft, he says. And the high-end stores, he says, who have luxury products, are also taking a considerable hit year in, year out with shoplifting. And then they turned their attention to our traffic issues in the city. And I'll come back to this in a few minutes' time. But Anne Doherty is urging, that's the chief exec, is urging motorists to have more consideration for other users while driving. She actually says, because there's a lot of chaos with regards to traffic in the city and down around the Link and the Ring Roads and down around Dunkettle and over the bridge from Christie Ring Bridge, where you're not allowed to be turning right. But she says, I think it's very hard, she says, to assess if something is working or isn't working when half the people using it are flouting it. She's talking, of course, particularly about people turning right over the two bridges and blocking up all of the traffic. She says, if we could all, as drivers, stick to the rules of the road, stay out of the yellow boxes and only turn where it's legal to do so, it might be a better way to assess the impact of the changes. She doesn't mention at all how confusing it can be for people, or indeed doesn't talk at all about the amount of cycle lanes that have been put in to take out what were perfectly good traffic lanes, or indeed the widening of footpaths. Terry Shannon waded in on it then, saying that this is Councillor Terry Shannon, says that the standard of driving in Cork City, he says, is appalling. And he says some drivers' behaviour is apparent, that some of them have never done a driving test, and that the traffic flow would flow better if the traffic lights at the key junctions were turned off. We've seen that, actually. There's trouble in Douglas for the last few days now with the traffic lights down in the village. And everybody's minding everybody else, and traffic is moving an awful lot more smoothly. And now you have to be on red alert, because you have to be careful as to what's coming against you and what have you, so you don't turn into oncoming traffic. But I'm not suggesting that the lights should be turned off, but that junction seems to do very well in the mornings with the traffic lights flashing on amber. Papers also today talk of the housing lists and issues involving our housing lists, particularly in Cork County Council. Did you know that Cork County Council delivered 141 new homes during the first 10 months of this year? 141 new builds. And that's less than half of what they delivered in 2021, and that there are 7,190 people on their housing waiting list in Cork County Council alone to the end of October. So 141 is way less than the 391 they delivered last year, and no doubt they'll be blaming COVID for that. So the papers deal with that as well. Interesting to see that we will get a statue of Michael Collins in the city, probably somewhere on Patrick Street. A crowdfunding has now been launched, and there was a big gathering at City Hall for the official launch of the fundraiser. It's a story that makes the echo today. What will the statue look like? Apparently, it will be, well, it's the Michael Collins 100 Committee are proposing a statue of Collins with his very famous bicycle. You know, that iconic bicycle of him from 1922. I think that'll be fantastic. I hope that it's life-size, and I hope that it's put in a really good position, unlike what they unfortunately did to the likes of Christy Ring out at the airport. And then, speaking of airports are being used more and more these days, not to go on holidays, but to leave the country. And the front of the Mail today says that more than half of people under the age of 30 say they're considering leaving the country due to a lot of different reasons, including spiralling living costs. Now, spiralling living costs is a catch-all for all of the worries and woes that they have. So half of under 30s are thinking of emigrating. Many have already gone. And they talk about statistically then the cost of living, the less and less disposable income they have to enjoy life. Rented accommodation is another reason. You know, those in employment say that they are so fed up of it now that they're even under pressure now to go to work when they're very unwell to avoid a loss of income. Most, if not all, have cut back drastically, like lots of other people. But and it's well to be able to cut your cloth according to your measure. But the younger generation need to go exploring and need experiences and life experiences. And sadly, a lot of that you can't get here. And they just want a better life. It's not just about a better climate, but just better in every single way. Meanwhile, the population continues to grow, apparently, three times the rate of home supply. The population rose by 360,000. But of course, when you do the maths on that, there isn't anywhere for them to live. So you can see where we are just literally. I don't know, have we fallen off the cliff yet, or are we tottering on the edge of the cliff? Actually, there's a very interesting story making the papers today about a woman accused of murdering a man. You wonder what is going through people's minds more and more these days and what we've gone through over the past couple of years. I'm not saying this is related to any way, shape or form. I have no idea. But she is accused of murdering a man who parked in her parking space outside her home. Apparently, when the Gardaí called, she was feeding fruit to her baby shortly after the man had been killed outdoors. And it's the trial of Christina Anderson. And her friends actually were saying that even in the days before the stabbing, she believed that she was under threat from the neighbours and that there were criminals in the estate and things like that. It's very sad and very tragic. Led to the stabbing of a man outside her door. Talking about arrests, now this is the second arrest in connection with the pit bull attack on Alejandro in Wexford last week, but a woman in her 30s has now been arrested. It's a story that makes the Star today. A woman in her 30s arrested in connection with the pit bull attack, which left the poor misfortunate Alejandro with horrific facial and body injuries at the age of 9. And the papers also today talk about the story involving poor old Shane McGowan. I hope he's okay. I know he's gone to hospital, and Victoria Mary Clark is making the papers today, asking fans, begging fans actually, to pray for him after he was rushed to hospital. He's about 64 now, confined to a wheelchair. He shattered his pelvis when he had a fall back in about 5 or 6 years ago, and he's been in the wheelchair ever since. I hope it's not anything too seriously and that he's out again, because he's just an incredible guy. He is an incredibly talented man, but of course he's so important to us and all year round, but particularly at Christmas time, and you'd want Shane McGowan home for Christmas, wouldn't you? And I mentioned COVID actually earlier on this morning. I'm not getting drilling into COVID itself, but more to be looking at the COVID stone than anything really, because there's a story in The Independent to say that men, apparently people put on the COVID stone over COVID because routines were changed. People had more time in their hands, or they were working from home, or they were stuck at home. So undoubtedly a few pounds were put on. So they call it the COVID stone, but apparently men are better than women at shedding the dreaded COVID stone. 1 in 3 women gained weight during the pandemic, and more than a quarter of men. So more women put it on, and men find it easier to get rid of. And on Thursday, oh, that we could get rid of this upcoming documentary on Netflix, the Harry and Meghan documentary. It's all over the red tops today. It really is. And it seems that what you're going to see has been very much manipulated. Many of the red tops today call them nothing better than whingers. Others are wondering, what was it? They were all talk about a quiet life. And they're throwing bombs all over the place now with Thursday's launch of their documentary. And they give examples in the red tops today as to how they have manipulated real life, particularly with the use of photographs and video clips that actually bear no relation or manipulated from other situations to suit their narrative. So this is a couple on a warpath with no thoughts for anybody else. In fact, the Mail call it one long whinge. But one thing's for sure, an awful lot of people will watch it because they just love car crash television. The papers also, thankfully, are reporting that more and more elderly people believe it's a good idea to spend their cash while they're alive. And I certainly would agree with that, rather than leaving lots of it behind and having a more frugal life just to leave it for relatives or children. You really need to enjoy your own money in your own lifetime, I believe, and forget about the consequences when you're gone. So research now says that 75% of elderly think that they should spend their cash where they're alive. And one way of getting rid of the blues, particularly people that aren't terribly fond of Christmas, apparently, is to send Christmas cards. It's a good way to feel better about yourself. So that's a tip in the right direction. And while last week we reported the death of Christine McVie in the papers, this morning an awful lot of Fleetwood Mac memorabilia went under the hammer. I'll come back to it a little later on this morning and give you more details of what was sold. But one thing that I need to mention, because she was front and centre in the Rumours album back in 1977, and if you remember the front of the album itself, where you had Mick Fleetwood standing with Christy McVie and her knee over his knee, and he had a pair of balls hanging by string or twine or something between his legs. It's Stevie Nicks. You're right, Stevie Nicks on the front of the Rumours. I'm trying to picture it in my head. Stevie Nicks on the front. Anyway, those balls apparently sold at auction for $128,000. The two wooden balls that he wore on the cover of the Rumours album. He said actually in an interview years back that the original ones were lavatory chains that he stole from the lavatory in a toilet in a hotel when he was very drunk on English ale. And he ripped them off the loo. Apparently he lost the original ones at a concert somewhere and replaced them, got a carpenter to make two new ones. And it's the new ones, his two new balls, that actually sold at auction for 128 grand. There are other items actually that sold, which come back to in a few minutes time. And where is that clip? I don't see it there. Can't see it. Kirsty Alley died overnight. Very, very sad. Best known for her role in the comedy series Cheers from the 90s, 80s and 90s. And also appeared in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I thought she was fantastic in that. And she just was such a great actress. And if you don't mind me sounding sexist, one of the most beautiful women in the world. And she died yesterday at the age of 71. I wanted to play a clip. In this clip, you'll hear her announce that her marriage, you hear her announce their, no, sorry. She marries Don. And shortly after the announcement, she admits to the others that she regrets it. And she feels she regrets it because Don is too good for her. So in this clip of Kirsty Alley, she's announcing their marriage and shortly after her breakdown to Woody and Norm, two other incredibly talented characters. Here's the late Kirsty Alley.
Hey, everybody, guess what? We got married! To the Justice of the Peace before we could change our minds. We're a little bit crazy, aren't we?
Yeah, she's a whole lot crazy, and I'm not at all. That averages out to just a little. Well done, Don. You've grabbed yourself you've got Rebecca. Yeah. Say, Don, here, have a seat. Let me get you a drink. Huh?
Thanks, Doc.
Okay. Sweetheart, I'll just pee over here.
Okay, hubby. Don't you stop loving me. I married a plumber. I'm the wife of a plumber. We're gonna have a whole bunch of little plumbers. And the horrible part of it is that he's too good for me.
Gee, Miss Al. Mrs. Santry.
And my name's Mrs. Santry!
I think Don's gonna make a great husband.
Well, of course he is, Woody. I just have a little case of the wedding day jitters. And I know that I love Don with all my heart. And until he finds out how screwed up I am and he dumps me, we are going to have the most wonderful marriage.
Here, here, huh?
He's one of these characters that was just so full of electricity and energy and one-liners and timing. And all of the other characters were just great on timing as well. You even picked up a little clip of Fraser, who went on to even bigger and better things. Fraser Crane, the late Kirstie Alley, who passed away at the age of 71. Lines are open. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. So to one of the stories from this morning, the Joint Policing Committee, a lot of it is very good and very positive. We're going to have hopefully a safer and more user-friendly city this side of Christmas and leading up to Christmas, because you will see more Garda Síochána on the beat, as in boots on the street. Many would say it would be great if that were the case all year round, but at least an effort is being made. So more on that. And also, as Councillor Terry Shannon describes, the appalling standard of driving on Leaside. So it's the motorist's fault, apparently, according to Terry. The traffic is so awful in the city and or across the bridges and down the quays and down at the Dunkettle roundabout and over at the Kinsale Road roundabout and all those kind of places. And he joins me by phone. Terry, good morning. Let me just get my lines right. Terry, do you stand over that morning? That driving in Cork is appalling?
Some driving, Neil, appalling, absolutely. And I think most people will see that, where people seem not to have any consideration now for anybody else. And where particularly people are sitting in yellow boxes, which the whole idea of yellow boxes is you don't enter it unless it's free on the other side. And so that holds up traffic then on the junction. Where people are trying to get through. And I see it regularly. I sit at the end of the Well Road, for instance, and there's a yellow box that I had got put in there a couple of years ago. And people are regularly sit in that box trying to go into the village. And three or four will have gone through the red light and sit in the red
box. And is that down to inconsiderate driving, or is it they just don't know the rules? Or they just don't know the rules of the road?
Well, I think they do know the rules of the road, but I think people are just not paying attention, and they're inconsiderate possibly, and they're busy, and they're trying to get to wherever they're trying to get to. And I understand that, but I think people need to be a bit more conscious of what they're doing. And that's why at the meeting yesterday, I suggested that at some strategic intersections, we should have Gardaí on the beat. And Neil, you'll remember.
Like in the old days, is it, where you had guards at junctions?
We had traffic. Yeah, we had people. And I remember, if not that long ago, in Douglas Village particularly, where guards were on the beat in the morning at the junctions getting the traffic through. And I'm not suggesting that we should necessarily turn off all the traffic lights, because that possibly would have a knock-on effect elsewhere. And obviously, if you turn off traffic lights, pedestrians have an issue. But I do think at peak times of the city, we should have guards at particular significant intersections helping the traffic to move, and also ensuring that the rules of the road are implemented so that people aren't sitting in yellow boxes. Because where people are sitting in yellow boxes, other people can't get through, and that does lead to a build-up of traffic.
Yeah, but you
There's
did
no
say,
doubt about that.
You did say, though, that the light should be turned off at key junctions. Didn't you?
I think we should look at that. I'm not saying every.
You said the traffic flows better when the lights at key junctions are turned off.
They are, yeah, and I think at peak times it's something we should particularly know with Christmas. I mean, the level of traffic is back now to where it was pre-pandemic.
But how would pedestrians get across the road with it? What about the green man, the red man?
Well, that's what I'm saying. But you wouldn't do it unless you have a guard at that intersection. That's the point I was making.
Oh, well, that wasn't quoted. Then, you're saying replace the traffic lights, turn them off, and put a guard there.
You couldn't just turn them off and leave it to, leave it to everyone's will.
That would be, surely that would lead to more chaos and pedestrians being knocked down.
I don't think so. No, I think where it can be managed properly. I mean, we've seen it before where guards are at intersections moving traffic through and allowing pedestrians where they want to cross. We see it with lollipop ladies all the time as well. So, I mean, it can be done. And I'm suggesting that it should be done for the Christmas period, where we have now a huge build-up in traffic in and around the city at the moment. And I think we just need to keep that traffic flowing. You
but
know?
Both you and the chief executive, who I contacted again, and just does not want to talk to me. I'm told again that her diary is full and unavailable. Both you and her are blaming motorists then. No.
I think there are certain motorists who...
You said that a lot of them have never done a driving test.
it appears, and certainly if they have, they could do with a refresher. There's no question or doubt about that. And I think anyone who's on the road will always see that. And I'm not suggesting that I'm the best motorist in the world either, Neil.
Right.
But I do feel that...
Have you any penalty points, Terry?
No. Thankfully. But, you know, I was at a meeting recently where we were looking at putting in traffic lights. We were doing a bit of work over at Our Lady Lourdes School.
Yeah.
And the engineers told us actually where traffic lights are put in, it tends to increase the traffic speed because people are racing to get to the lights, they're racing to get through the orange light and get through the red light, and that the traffic actually speeds up where there are lights. So I think it's something we need to look at, and I think clearly at this time of the year, what I'm suggesting is we should have more guards. We will have more guards on the beat, but I think I'd like to see more guards helping with the traffic.
But the question then for the Garda Síochána, of course, is where would they get the Gardaí? Because we have a shortage as it is.
Well, there are, but that doesn't mean there aren't any guards, Neil. I mean, is it necessary to have all the guards walking at the streets all the time? I think we could have...
But that was the suggestion yesterday, though, wasn't it, that we would have more in the city centre this side of Christmas? I mean, that's great,
like,
news.
As well as on the beat, Neil, they can at times then move to the large junctions where they can be doing traffic duty as well. It's not you do one or the other. The guards are there and they have a multiplicity duty to in terms of their duties around the city. So, you know, as well as being on the beat and looking after the city streets, they could do some traffic management roles as well. And I think that's something that I was asking for. And particularly in Douglas, I'm happy to see that we are having more guards over at Mahon Point, and they will be looking at traffic there. That's what they're doing, moving the traffic. I welcome that, but I would like to see it in Douglas, and I would like to see it in the city centre as well. You know, clearly there is an issue with traffic in Mahon. The guards at Mahon Point, the guards have seen that, so they will be on traffic duty there. So I'm suggesting that if it's there, and I welcome that, we should look at Douglas, and I'm not saying just Douglas, obviously other parts of the city, and in the city centre as well, because I think, you know, there is a build-up of traffic, people get frustrated, and does have a negative impact on business in the city.
Do you think that more people are frustrated now than ever before, that they're under a lot more pressure now to get from A to B, and they had 2 years of COVID, and maybe they're a little more short-tempered?
Well, I've said it before. I mean, I see it particularly at peak times at school. You know, people are getting to work, they're getting their kids to school, and they're in that box, which is their car, and they're not looking around them, they're not thinking about other people. They're, look, I've got to do this morning, I've got to do that this morning. And, you know, they're not aware of their surroundings maybe as they should be. And I would be, look, I'm including myself in that, I'm no better than anybody else. But I do believe that a bit more courtesy will go a long way.
It's hard though when you kind of close two bridges of them to get across the main arteries of the city from south side to north side. I mean, the city manager talks about, you know, you can't judge how good the changes on Christy Ring Bridge are because too many people are ignoring the change and crossing over it. You kind of have to understand as to why they're doing that. She says you can't assess something as to whether it's working or not when half the people using it are flouting it. She's referring to not being able to turn right over the bridges. But people, they have no other choice.
Well, they do, Neil. I mean, and this is a part of an overall
but it leads to huge delays for them and much longer routes to get home.
Well, yeah, and look, I know you had a thing on your programme recently about Dunkettle. I came through Dunkettle at 8 o'clock this morning, Neil, and or through the tunnel, and I sailed through at 8 o'clock this morning, whereas before you would be in traffic well back to
I can't disagree with that. I think if people follow the signs, I'm not critical of drivers, but I think if you get in your proper lane early enough, you'll be grand.
That's the point. And so people are trying to get ahead of themselves. So, and look, we are involved in a major realignment.
People are switching lanes way too late, and they are causing chaos for others then. Whereas if you change your lane really early, get yourself set up in advance, don't want to sound like a school teacher, you'll sail through Dunkettle, I think, anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And I went through the tunnel this morning at 8 o'clock, and I sailed through it and up the Dublin Road, no bother whatsoever. And so we are involved in a major reorganisation of the traffic on the north side of the river. And I think, you know, people need to look at it and need to follow the signs. And I suggested, you know, if people go out on a Sunday, if they're not doing anything else, to look at the layout and to be...
That's a good idea as well. Here's a text, though. Tell Terry Shannon, people are fed up sitting in traffic for hours. They're frustrated. They want to get home after a long day's work. Making footpaths past the length of the boggy road or cycle lanes doesn't help. It's turned it into a complete joke. That's a typical text now from a typical motorist.
Neil, I don't disagree with that at all. And I mean, I've said before, you know, we share the public realm. We have pedestrians, we have cyclists, we have public transport, we have motorists. But I mean, you know, we have a proliferation of cycle lanes, and I don't see cyclists in them.
No.
And we have creative footpaths that you'd land 747s on.
The Mall is a typical example. It's just incredible.
And
I never see a cyclist up and down the Mall.
And we have lost €1.5 million in parking charges, which is an income flow for the city council to do other work.
So why did you vote for it then?
Well, we're looking at trying to change habits, and we're prepared to give things a chance. I mean, Bus Connect similarly are attempting to do similar works that are taking a sledgehammer to problems in the city. So,
but you're copying European and world cities whose weather and climate is much kinder than ours. Like, people need their cars.
And you should attend council meetings, Neil, because that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, but yet we see, you mentioned Dunkettle. I see Jerry Buttermer talking about it at the JP's Joint Police Committee yesterday. He thinks that those Gatso vans and the speed vans are nothing more than just a money-making racket.
Yeah, and I would have sympathy for that point of view, though I think they do change habits. I think people understand or get to know that there's a speed van in a particular location, and it does change habits. And the guards tell us all the time, because it does come up at JPC meetings, that these vans are at locations where there
that
are
accidents. Yeah. The chief said that yesterday.
And I think, look, a bit of courtesy, really. I mean, people get into their cars and they morph into something that they're not normally, and they get very aggressive at times and the whole lot. So I think a small bit of courtesy, if we all be a bit more courteous to each other, it might help as well, Neil, you know?
Just on the basis of what we discussed, texter here says, the dogs on the street know why the traffic is a disaster in Cork City. It's the council who caused the mess, and now we're hearing on the air that they're turning around and blaming the public as usual. It kind of sounds like that we are at where we're at because people are stupid or discourteous or don't know how to drive. You call it appalling, and the chief exec says you can't assess anything properly when people aren't following the rules.
Well, the dogs in the street might think that, Neil, but I don't think the people think that. And I think the people themselves in cars can see, you know.
The dogs on the street being the people.
Yeah, well, no, I wouldn't think it. I wouldn't. They're your words now, Neil. I wouldn't call the people of Cork like that at all. I use that term for them. I think the people of Cork know exactly what I'm talking about, and we all understand the rules of the road, and we all know when we're sitting in yellow boxes, you know, they look at the person next to them and kind of say, sorry, I'm in the yellow box. They know they're sitting in a yellow box. They know they've gone through a red light. And I understand the frustrations of why people are doing that. All I'm saying is that for the Christmas period, at least, what we're doing in Mahon Point, we should do in Douglas, and we should do in the city centre, so that we have guards who are monitoring these major junctions and just keeping the traffic flowing, because that person is right. People are sitting in traffic and they're getting frustrated. And I understand that. You know?
So that would stop people from running red lights, and that would stop people sitting in the middle of yellow boxes if there were guards on those key junctions.
Yeah, and there was a suggestion at council recently where suggested that cameras should be put in yellow boxes so that people would automatically get a fine if they sit in a yellow box.
Which is perfectly normal around the world, but we don't have that, do we? And we don't have that...
Not at the moment as a cost factor there, but I think maybe it's something that could be piloted in some of the major junctions and see how that works. But I think, because I think the message would get out then that, look, we all know what a yellow box is for. It's not for sitting, it's not for parking, it's for driving through. And you shouldn't sit in the yellow box because you're blocking the other entrance, you know. And so maybe that's something to look at, you know.
Okay.
But I certainly think for the Christmas period, I just would like to see more guards on traffic duty, helping pedestrians, helping motorists, which ultimately will help the businesses in town, because people will come into town.
All right, let's get the public's opinion on this. Thank you, Terry. As always, Councillor Terry Shannon, just following up on the Joint Policing Committee meeting yesterday, which covered all of that, and also more boots on the ground leading up to Christmas and across the Christmas period, tackling more crime, and also more covert operations by An Garda Síochána, which would be undercover Gardaí, as I said. I've seen them, perhaps you've seen them as well, and they do swoop, and it makes a big big difference. So in spite of the appalling driving habits of Corkonians, hopefully the city will be a safer place in the next few weeks. And maybe we could learn from it, and that could continue into the new year. Text 0868104106. One quick call just ahead of the ad break. Isabella, good morning.
Good morning.
I know you're on speakerphone because you're in the motor car, so do proceed with caution. What's on your mind?
Oh, I can't agree more with team, yes?
You're currently on the Dublin Road trying to get into the city. You're about 200 metres from the Little Island Slip, and you need to get to where? Ringaskiddy?
Ringaskiddy, yes,
okay.
Correct.
And that journey could take an hour and a half from where to where?
From Fermoy.
Okay, and talk to me about the driving habits of people at the Dunkettle roundabout. I think that's your point.
Exactly. You know, I'm on the road 3 times a week, and what I can see, people, they are just using the new street the same way as they were using the Mahon Point street. They are just driving through the left lane until the very, very end, and they are skipping the lines just to, you know, to avoid the queue.
And are they doing that to... You're claiming that they do that to avoid the queue. It's not that they don't know that the lanes have changed.
There is probably a percentage of the people, they are not aware as well. I know that. Not everyone is using the roads on a daily basis. But, you know, sometimes it's just too many people. You can, you know, it can be a coincidence. Everyone is, like, new on the roads and the new layout. And the signage is clear enough. It was clear enough for me, and from the day one, you know, you have to just pay attention. And
if you believe that if you follow the signs, of which there are plenty, you won't get yourself into trouble at the last minute finding yourself in the wrong lane.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
But there are those that use quiet lanes to get further up and then jump the queue and try and get across into another lane, and that's causing it.
Yes, I was on my way back from work last Friday, and there was an incident before the tunnel, and it looked like that. There was a car switching the lane on the very last minute. And there was just basically an incident with the three cars involved.
You mean the three of them crashed?
Yeah, the middle was crashed.
Okay, all right. Okay, your line's breaking up. Thank you for that, Isabella. That's a typical example of somebody that drives Dunkettle a few times a week. Your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106.
Get it off your chest. Text the Neil Prendeville Show now. 086-8104-106.
Jerry Buttimer.
Red FM.
Jerry Buttimer drilled in on speed cameras then, and speed vans and gatzos and what have you. And he says they're nothing more than, some of them anyway at least, are nothing more than a money-making exercise. He says placing speed vans in strategic locations is, in my mind, a money-making exercise. Where there are other parts of the city where speeding is a serious problem, where there are no speed cameras. He says, I'm baffled about the locations. Also, I was in town on Friday and I couldn't make head nor tail of this panaban. I just don't understand it. I think it's just even adding more issues for people trying to go about their business in their perfectly legally held motor cars. But there were two Gardaí enforcing the panaban in the middle of Patrick Street, not too far from the old Pav. And at one stage, a third Garda joined them. I'm not in any way dissing the guards. They were given their duties and they were told to go and enforce the panaban and stopping cars and what have you and taking details. But at one stage, there was three of them standing there together and I couldn't help but thinking, come on, in all fairness, surely be to God, we could be doing better than this. But anyway, that's just my thought. Yours are welcome. Text 0868104106. Frank, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
Good. The new traffic regulations are crazy. In what way?
Absolutely ridiculous. I don't know who sat in there and thought these up on probably a Monday morning when they had a hangover or something.
Well, what parts of it are crazy?
Right. We give a very simple example, Neil. You get into a taxi on Merchant's Quay at the entrance to Dunstore, the shopping centre, we'll
say,
on Merchant's Quay. You want to go to Mayfield. Your normal fare from Merchant's Quay to most parts of Mayfield would be around €8, thereabouts. Now, with the new regulations, you get into that cab, by law, even though they're probably not doing it, he's supposed to go down to the Northgate Bridge, up Shandon Street, down to Blackpool, and up to Mayfield, making your fare probably around 20.
Is that the only way to get from Merchant's Quay to Mayfield? You can't go over Patrick's Bridge.
Taxis are not allowed to use the bus lanes with the new regulations. on the bridge, on the bridges. They're not allowed to turn right on the bridges. It's got so bad that they've even taken the arrow off the traffic lights to turn right on.
Well, could you do a U-turn though and go over Brian Boru Bridge?
Sure, a U-turn is 100% illegal.
Not to taxi drivers though.
Well.
For restaurants, yes. And, there's special laws for them, fellas.
You try doing a U-turn on Merchant's Quay.
Okay, so you can't go over Patrick's Bridge, you can't go over Christie Ring Bridge, so you go all the way down to the Northgate Bridge, you go up Shandon Street. Where do you go then?
Down to Blackpool.
And you go up over the ring then?
Yeah.
So what's the fare now?
The fare would be, I'd be guessing, in and around €20.
20?
Yeah.
From 8?
Yeah, you think of the traffic on the Key, Lavitt's Quay leading north Northgate Bridge to the traffic on Shandon Street.
Yeah. So taxi drivers must love that, do they know?
Well, I wouldn't think so, because, I mean, you're better off with €4-8 jobs in the time it'll take.
Well, that's true, yeah, when you do the maths on it. Okay, well, that's a good example of how it's chaotic then, if you have to go that distance to come all the way back again.
Completely chaotic. I mean, okay, they will start putting guards on the bridges to stop people turning. I mean, they've already started putting them on PAN to enforce that crazy ban.
Yeah.
And now they will put them, and then sure, the guards should have a lot better things to be doing, in fairness, Neil.
Yeah, but there is a suggestion, and Terry Shannon made the suggestion yesterday and again this morning, that at key junctions, at peak times, it's kind of like always a peak time now, that there should be. Do you remember years and years ago, there would be a member of An Garda Síochána standing in the middle of the junction, usually with white gloves on, and they're directing
traffic.
That's
right, they'd be the traffic corps, but the traffic corps is completely depleted, they'd imagine.
Don't know about that.
I don't think that. I mean, Neil, they haven't the numbers to police the streets.
Well, that's just it. Where they'd come from, I have no idea.
Well, unless they brought back this, I don't know where it disappeared, or if it's still there.
You'd have guards at the junctions directing traffic. That would involve then needing to turn off the traffic lights. Not because the traffic lights are causing confusion. It's just people don't follow the rules. It's back to the rules again. What running red lights, sitting in the middle of yellow boxes.
Neil, I live on Blarney Street, and I'll give you an awful simple example. The day before yesterday, it was last Friday, I was down at the traffic lights on the Northgate Bridge to cross over to North Main Street.
Yeah.
I was there 10 minutes, and in 10 minutes, 13 cyclists and 4 cars broke every rule in the book. There was 8 cyclists turned onto the North Main Street.
Yeah, they don't do themselves any favours. Cyclists think that the lights don't apply to them, and they do.
Not just the lights. Even if they had the green light, they turned left from the quay onto the North Main Street, which is one way, the opposite way. 3 of those cyclists, were delivery drivers, the others weren't. And in this time,
but they're the worst of them all, though. The guys that are delivering the bikes.
Without a doubt. And in this 10 minutes I was standing there, there was a squad car parked at the gate cinema.
Right. Okay.
And he took complete no notice of anything that was going on.
Yeah. Probably doing different work and not assigned to traffic, watching some characters.
And that's, we don't have the guards to do the traffic that Terry is talking about, like, unless they bring back this guard reserve, or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea as to how it would be fixed.
But that taxi emergency key example, it just shows the craziness of it.
Okay, thanks for that. Cheers, James. Good example, and thank you for it. Take care. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
Call the Neil Prendeville Show now. 0818-104-106. Red FM.
Back to Dunkettle then. James, good morning.
Neil, hi.
Good, thanks for taking the call. You don't think it's drivers intentionally leaving it to the last minute to use quieter lanes and then to switch? Okay, what do you believe?
Not all of them. Naturally, if you're going left, you veer left, you keep to the left lane. If you're going right, you keep to the right lane, approaching a roundabout or an intersection. But in Dunkettle, you got to go left to go right.
That's right. You have to be in the left lane to travel
to go right
east. Yeah.
So that's why I think you see people coming up and they don't realise. I know that there are some people jumping the queue. Of course there are. But just a lot of people don't realise because they see at the last minute They're not sure where they're going. It's nothing to do with signage. Maybe there should be signage in from Douglas to say what line you should be in or what lane you should be in or whatever. I don't know. But that to me seems unnatural. Now, the other thing
is... So in your text, you use the word instinct. It goes against their instinct to be in the right lane to go left.
Yeah, being in the left lane to go right. Yeah. It's actually been in the left lane to go right. Yeah. It goes against the grain of natural driving.
Yeah, but...
You understand what I'm saying?
Well, just read the goddamn signs.
Yeah, but like, I mean, in fairness, if you've been doing that maybe on and off for a number of times, you know, you're going to get that crisscrossing. Now, the other thing is about the city centre. I think that's been contrived. That's the way it was designed. Like the Dublin County Manager said, we've got to aggressively stop traffic cars going into city centres. So, I mean, there's four yellow boxes around Merchants Quay and up on around that block. You've no choice but to go into the box sometimes.
Why?
Because you get stuck in it, because there's no way out. You go with the lights change, people move.
But you can't go into it unless there's space on the other side of it for you to go out. That's the rule.
I know that, but people won't do that because they're sitting there for 3 and 4 and 5 changes of lights.
Because
it's a gridlock square. It's a
and they see
square.
Others doing it then and they get frustrated, yeah, and they're still sitting there following the rules. I know.
Going through the city in the evening, sometimes I have to do it. 9 to 10 minutes a kilometre it takes. That's the time it takes.
And what do you put it down to? The redesign of the city centre, the closing of bridges, the extending of cycle lanes, the bigger footpaths, the taking out of lanes, what?
Cut the cars out of the city centres. That's what it's all about.
But a lot of those people are just trying to go home.
Of course they are, but like, I mean, there's no place, there's no proper, there's only one park and ride, isn't that right?
Yeah.
There's nothing on the north side park and ride, so you got no choice but to go in. But yet they've created this, not just in Cork, the same as in Limerick. They've all the centre of Limerick dug up. They've all the centre of Thurles dug up and slabbed and concreted and total gridlock in all those towns and cities. It can't be by accident.
All right. Okay. Okay. Instinctively, though, I understand the point you're making that people for so many years stayed left to go left and stayed right to go right. Now it's the opposite because that's the way they designed it.
For some strange reason, I don't know why. I don't know why it couldn't have been done the other way.
All right, thank you
but
for
anyway,
that. Well said. Thanks, James. Keep it coming, lads. Text 0868104106. Can't agree more with your caller from the M8. I'm in traffic right now on the M8. There are so many skipping the queue. It's unbelievable. Oh, my God. Tell Terry to go away and do some productive work instead of talking tripe like he is right now. Well, way back in the day, you did have traffic Gardaí in all of the key junctions, even before we had yellow boxes. Yellow boxes replaced what would have been a guard on duty directing traffic and doing it very well. Go Terry in his yellow boxes. You can enter the yellow box if you're turning right. This is the rule of the road. I also don't think all of this is down to bad drivers, you know. It's a result of roadworks, cycle lanes, and the fact that a lot of people are back in their cars and back on the road now after COVID. And add to the fact that many, many homes now, ours included, has more than one motor car. Whereas back in the day, in the very same city, with the same square footage, if you were lucky enough to have a car, you had a car. Now, of course, you got homes with multiple cars, so it's added to the amount of them as well. Back after 10.
I'm Lana O'Connor. Red FM News is first for local, national and international news. And you can stay up to date by tuning into our hourly news bulletins or by clicking on redfm.ie.
Get it off your chest. Text the Neil Prendeville Show now. 086 8104106. Red FM.
And unfortunately, you know, that's a worry for people as temperatures continue to drop with regards to their energy and heating bills. And many people, of course, have hot water bottles. And there's been a big run on thermal weather or thermal tops and jocks and what have you also into the bargain. I was talking about turkey pop-ups. You might well need them if you're lucky enough to win one of our turkey or hams right across this week, courtesy of ourselves and Jimmy Crowley Butchers, the Mill Road in Middleton. And Jim Crowley's Craft Butchers are based down there for many a year now and continue to win McKenna Guide Awards for the best in Ireland. So we have vouchers to give away all week for a turkey and ham for Jim Crowley Butchers, the Mill Road in Middleton. Also, family passes for the very first Fundamania Christmas Village experience, which opens on the 16th of December and runs to the 8th of January on the Tramore Road. So the Fundamania Christmas Village, it also includes actually a trip to Fawcett's Circus. So they're a fabulous, fabulous prize to win. And these passes, of course, are for a family of four. That's all between now and midday today. You are listening out, of course, for yet another Christmas song sometime between now and midday, and I'll open the phone lines then. Morning. Tell Terry people are fed up sitting in traffic for hours. They're frustrated. They want to get home after a long day's work. They made the footpaths the length of the boggy road, and that doesn't help. Make extra lanes instead of extra footpaths. You should challenge Terry Shannon to drive from Wilton to Ballyvolan daily at 5:30. It's carnage since the stupid lane changes. Great idea in theory, says Mags, but I'd love to know where the extra garda for traffic duty will come from. And there's loads more like this. What they should do is allow, at the very least, commercial vehicles onto Patrick Street. I was called, this guy drives for a living, has a commercial vehicle. I was called into a job on Patrick Street where an alarm wouldn't stop going off. Came out 10 minutes later with a fine on my windscreen. Cork City Council is a joke. Oh, by the way, I'm also one of the drivers that flout the Christie Ring Bridge layout. It literally will get me caught on the quay between the Opera House and the Gate Cinema for 20 minutes. So he drives over Christie Ring. You're not supposed to. Council's a joke. They're helping no one. They're just giving out fines. It's a money racket. More guards will even just mean more revenue. And one of the points I made to Terry was, even the dogs on the street know why the traffic's a disaster. Council caused the mess, and now I hear they're blaming the public as usual. Terry says, well, the dogs on the street might know it, but the people don't. I'm wasting 10 minutes of my life listening to an out-of-touch councillor who has no idea what he's saying, constantly contradicting himself. Actually, he made some very good points as well, I have to say, particularly regarding Dunkettle. I mean, I don't think that it's preaching at people to say, go down there at the weekend if you have a spare 10 minutes and just learn how the lanes actually work. That's a bit of good advice. I did it. The park and ride goes every Saturday and Sunday, every 15 minutes from the county hall. No one on them, not a sign in the area. Maybe that's because nobody knows that there's a park and ride that goes every Saturday and Sunday, every 15 minutes from the county hall. I didn't. I don't see anything about it online. Junctions are blocked regardless of people in yellow boxes, Neil. Traffic layout in the city is a disgrace. Also, way too many cars. Terry Shannon's away with the birds. Traffic around the city is at a standstill during rush hour morning and evening times. The traffic at Mahon Point has been an issue since Mahon Point opened. Yeah, you want to see it in a Sunday afternoon. Douglas is an area to be avoided due to traffic problems. The traffic from Blackrock Road to Penrose Wharf and the Keys to Carroll's Quay is a total disaster. But as usual, people blame the drivers. Maybe it's all of the above. Maybe it's the layout. Maybe it's the drivers. Maybe it's inconsiderate drivers. Maybe it's people who just need to go and do a driving test all over again. Back to the phone lines we go. Keep those texts coming. Text 0868104106. Thomas, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Ah, Thomas, how are you? You're living down St. Patrick's Terrace, aren't you?
St. Patrick's Terrace.
You've seen a lot of changes down there.
On the low road now, we have 7 sets of traffic lights.
7.
From the Coliseum down to where the old ferry boat was, we have 7 sets of traffic lights.
There used to be that many, sure they didn't. There might have been there one isn't. Or two.
And the other problem is that you have McCurtain Street, which is one of the main arteries out of Cork City, to go onto the Dublin Road. And for me, it's the most congested street in Cork City. And the problem that I have with it, and I think the people that work there that should have a problem with it, is that the exhaust fumes that come down, that are, are delivered out of the trucks, buses and everything coming down McCurtain Street. What you have is that you have diners sitting on both sides of the streets. And now they're going to make that two-way. And what I would love to know, because I read somewhere that exhaust fumes do have a health issue.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
And I would like to know how the people that work there are protected.
There's a child, a small little child actually, last year, cause of death in the UK was traffic fumes.
Yes. And what I'm surmising here, Neil, is that the people that work there, like you have people sitting out there and they're dining and they're probably tasting their food, thinking it's beautiful, and all they're tasting is exhaust fumes. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah.
I don't dine there myself. I would never dine where there is traffic. But I think that the people that walk up there should be on sort of danger money, because they're walking in an environment that for 8 hours a day, that they're living in an exhaust environment.
Do you have to come out of your garden because of traffic fumes down there?
During the summer, I was sitting out in the garden with a couple of friends, and there was an accident down on the Skew Bridge, and there was a traffic jam. And we were sitting down, and I started coughing because I'm a pensioner, and my breathing wouldn't be that great.
Okay.
I started coughing. My throat was getting dry. And next person alongside of me started coughing. It was the exhaust fumes, Neil. You could see them rising up. The trucks were jammed bumper to bumper. There was no movement in the traffic at all.
So they should have one of those magic trees that they have inside in the city down around there. I'd say they'd be going off the charts.
But the corporation know about this, Neil. And the reason I'm saying that is because they have an air monitoring unit on the corner of Railway Street and the Lord Lamont.
Does it work?
I suppose it's working because it's big enough, God Almighty, the size of maybe, you know, a telephone box.
I didn't know that. So the air monitoring unit there, but all of those traffic lights wouldn't help fumes, though. I mean, free-flowing traffic would be better, wouldn't it?
No, to stop and start, and especially when you finish at 5 o'clock or something like that. I have this kind of a crazy dream that if you had a truck strike, and that they all went on a sort of a go slow drive, and they started to come through Patrick Street and down McCurtain Street, I'd say they'd wipe out McCurtain Street. I'd say you'd have bodies all over the place in a couple of hours from the exhaust fumes.
You were also just making one final point about all the redevelopment down that area, the Lower Road, down that area. You have the new Dean Hotel and lots of office blocks, apparently. Yeah. But you say no parking, is it?
No parking. I actually have a parking permit, Neil. And because I live on my own, there's nobody can visit me because they'd have to pay to come down to see me. The other problem is that they won't get a parking space because there's no parking there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I myself, they redeveloped that corner on Railway Street as you're heading down.
I know it, yeah, yeah.
I think they redeveloped that. And there's still sort of, what would you call it, yellow lines left over from where they put in new parking areas, right?
Yeah.
Last Friday, I got a parking ticket because there's a yellow line there, and the yellow line isn't 2 meters long, a double yellow line.
You got a parking ticket with a permit?
I have a permit, yeah. But the area, there was originally yellow lines there, right? There's still one there. But this particular part of the parking area, there's one yellow line. It's only about, it isn't 2 meters long. But because my car was on it, and it was going on to the other car, it looked like I was, you could say I was parked.
But you were just trying to park to go into your own home.
Yeah, but it's that those yellow lines are decommissioned. They're put in.
So you're going to appeal that, are you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting down here in front of my printing off photographs.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what they say with regards to your appeal. Come back to me on that. But just tell me, if somebody books into the Dean, where do they park?
They have to park on Railway Street or the Lord Lamoille Road.
Okay, isn't there dedicated parking in there as well, though?
There is at the back, but for convenience, people don't do it. Because if they park in by the back of the railway, then they have to come back out and they're facing traffic.
So the Dean doesn't have its own designated parking, does it? No.
So they
built a hotel and didn't. Because I think it does. It's adjacent to it. Might be a bit of a distance, but yeah.
And once
it's just not convenient, you're saying.
Yeah. Once they start to complete the buildings again, there's going to be more. You know, there's going to be more parking. And the thing about it, like that, we're just a small community here, as you well know. There's only 12 houses. Now, I'm not worried about the people in the flats. I'm worrying about the residents.
Yeah.
Like I'm on the Low Road 76 years. You know, I'm one of the oldest residents that live on the Low Road. And for me, like I've been parking in Railway Street all my life. I've been parking on the Low Road. If I go to a doctor, Neil. And if I come back, I could be sitting in my car for half an hour to an hour and a half waiting to get a parking space as I come back my car.
Just to go in your own front door?
Just to go in my own front door.
My God, that's insane.
And the other side of it then is because I live on my own, I don't get any visitors, because if you come down to me, you have to pay to see me.
I know. Listen, on St. Patrick's Day, did you know the O'Regans there at all?
Oh yeah, I did. Jimmy O'Regan, Billy O'Regan.
I knew
Frank
Billy
O'Regan.
Very well. I knew Jimmy as well. I think he's a hairdresser doing very well in America. Yeah. They were the loveliest family, weren't they?
Actually, Jimmy was home
Go away.
He was home a couple of months ago.
Delighted to hear that. Lovely people.
Coming over to St. Patrick's Church. I'm taking a photograph of St. Patrick's Church.
There you go. Small world.
Of course, you know, then Billy passed on.
I know. He was one of my best mates. A great guy.
Man.
Listen, lovely chatting with you, Thomas. Thanks for that. Mind yourself.
Yeah, but the other side of it, Neil, what I want is I would like a medical opinion on the exhaust fumes that are issued on McCutton Street and the people that walk there. Should they get protection? Should they get danger money? I would love somebody to come on, a doctor to come on and say, this is a very unhealthy situation.
An unhealthy street. Okay, the best value parking of all, I'm told, they won't like me saying it, but apparently is at the railway station at Kent. You can park there all day for €8.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, but then, Niall...
8.50, I think, to be absolutely accurate during the week.
If you're a resident and you're a pensioner, you know...
I'm just saying, I imagine there are a lot of people using that.
If you don't have a parking permit, I mean, that's...
You're an hour and a half trying to get into your own home. I know. Okay.
We are the most congested city in Ireland. I'd say, if not in Ireland, in Europe, the way we're going.
All right. Okay, thanks, Thomas. Actually, the Dean doesn't have its own parking, I'm told. Just to clarify that, the Dean doesn't have its own parking. They give a discount for people to park on, wait for it, Merchant's Quay. A discount for Merchant's Quay. That's a long walk, isn't it, from Merchant's Quay to the Dean? Back after the break.
Get it off your chest. Call Neil Prendeville now on 0818 104 106 Red FM.
We're back to text in a moment, but first up, Una, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
You believe that nothing has changed in 30 years, is it?
Yeah, I remember coming from school, sitting on buses in the Grand Parade and on the Mall for maybe an hour, sitting in traffic, you know.
Coming home from school, probably falling asleep on the upstairs of the bus.
Yeah, the windows all steamed up and the bus full, you know.
Yeah.
People used buses then. There weren't as many cars in the road, but there was still congestion. And I mean... The responsibility of the roads department in any council is to keep the traffic flowing. You can't turn around and say to the people, it's your fault. It's their fault. They have to build systems that keep the traffic flowing. And in Cork, it's not Los Angeles or New York.
But you know something? If there were cameras on the yellow boxes and they captured everybody's car edge, people would stop entering the yellow box because they know there would be an automatic fine. They'd be caught on camera. Would solve the problem then, wouldn't it?
No, I mean, that's again, it's sanctioning the people, you know? I mean, the thing about it is that you're coming around, we'll say, for example, from the Link Road and heading the back of the City Hall towards the train station, just for example, at a rush hour time. You know, you're looking ahead and your lights are green and the lights up ahead are red and there's cars coming, converging from the right into the yellow box because they're expecting that the lights are going to change. Nothing changes up there and we're all sitting there looking like cows looking over a ditch.
And then
when
they do, nothing can move even when those lights change.
Well, because there's more lights up ahead and as the gentleman said earlier on then, you're coming around there by the train station and... There's, he said, 7 sets of traffic lights along that direction. So, I mean, it's the same, we'll say, coming into the back Douglas Road off the motorway. There's a roundabout there, which I think is a great idea. But you come off the road onto the roundabout and then down around at the back of the shopping centre, a couple of metres down, there's traffic lights.
But time after time yesterday, it's the motorists are being blamed. Terry Shannon says that driving in Cork is appalling. The chief executive is saying you can't judge how effective the changes are because people aren't following the rules. They're blaming motorists time after time.
Well, you see, this is the same time old story. It would be a great system if there were no drivers, you know?
Or it could be a great system if we followed the rules of the road, didn't run red lights and go in and block up yellow boxes.
Well, you see, if the traffic is flowing, the chances of being stuck in the yellow box lowers. And as other people have said, the frustration of sitting there.
It is the frustration of sitting there. And eventually people just say, I can't do this anymore. I just have to go for it.
Well, when you're looking ahead and the lights are red, your lights are green, and the lights ahead are red for maybe, 3 or 4 minutes, And it doesn't seem like a long time, but you're after being sitting there for maybe for 20 minutes right. trying to get up through the traffic lights. Now, roundabouts are a much better system for a small area. I'm not an engineer, but I just think that, you know, roundabouts and zebra crossings...
They block the roundabouts as well, though. They would, like, same thing.
Yeah, but if there are traffic lights directly after them, they do, like in the back Douglas Road. But if there's a certain flow, it's the responsibility. They can't throw their hands up now and say, oh, there's too many cars and too many drivers. They have to look at the... And the other thing with traffic lights is one day you'll go through a set of traffic lights and maybe 10 cars will get through. You go through the same set of traffic lights the next day and only 2 cars will get through. That's in light traffic even.
But if you have to look at it historically, you were given comparisons to being, you know, 30 years ago stuck on the Mall going home from school for an hour or what have you on a bus. But like that's the very same city 30 years ago as it is today with probably 3 yeah. or 4 times as many cars. You know, 30 or 40 years ago, if people were lucky enough to have a car, it was one. Whereas now in many homes, you could have 2 and perhaps 3 cars.
Well, then you set up a system and you cut back on all these traffic lights. It's like they got a load of traffic lights free from somewhere a number of years ago and just stuck them everywhere.
You're too many traffic lights.
They're just blocking up far too many traffic lights.
Okay.
Now, the other thing I want to say, to put on record, is I want to know what's going on down in Belgooley with the speed traps. I come up from that direction quite a lot. And I don't mind the speed vans being there. Of course, they have to do their job. Like, for example, the other night, I was coming up at about 6 o'clock. There was a speed trap on the Kinsale side of Belgooley.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
You know why it's there, don't you?
Well, why?
Because it is a treacherous part. The Kinsale side of Belgooley, there's a treacherous bend there, and there have been many crashes, and there have been deaths there. People have been killed in cars. There was a guy on a motorbike killed there. It's deadly. They put it there.
And I have no problem with them being there. But then I drove through the village and just on the other side going out, there was a squad car with his camera out. I mean, I've no objection to traffic, you know, speed traps or whatever.
Yeah.
But to me, that's entrapment.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, have your speed van, but don't have a squad car on the other side. You know?
Okay, thank you for that. Thanks, Una. Text 0868104106. We may well have no Gardaí in Cork. We may well have less in the future because young people aren't taking up places in Templemore when they're even given a place. It's the realization, you see, that they will never be able to live on a Garda salary ever. Well, I gave you the rates of pay for on Garda Síochána yesterday from Templemore right up to 19 years of service. And it is atrociously low. Please explain the bus corridor from Wilton to Dennehy's Cross. Bus lane from 7:30 to 9:30, 4:30 to 6:30. It's a traffic lane outside those hours. Well, you've explained it yourself. And that's exactly what it is. Don't know if people know this. If you're coming from Glanmire roundabout to Dunkettle roundabout and heading for the tunnel, there are 2 lanes. Weirdly, people only use 1 instead of the 2, and that's causing major backups. There's absolutely no way that Terry Shannon will sail through the tunnel at 8 o'clock in the morning. I travel from Carrigtwohill to the airport every morning and afternoon. The only way he'd sail through is if he's Moses and parted traffic like the sea. But he is 100% right on bad driving, though. What you see is unbelievable down there. People driving in the overtaking lane at 30 kilometres in a 100 kilometre zone. Loads of them. Cars coming off slip roads and trying to go straight across 2 lanes to get into the overtaking lane. Do people not know that both lanes go exactly the same way in the same direction? And one final one, the driving habits of some Cork drivers anywhere from Dunkettle to East Cork only leaves me to suspect that they're either driving on a provisional license or they're driving on another planet. It's hard to rationalise the incompetence that I routinely witness at junctions and roundabouts in Cork. And I've driven in the EU, the UK, Australia and the UK, where people at least know how to use an indicator. People in Cork seem to think using an indicator is just not necessary. Again, it leads me to think a high number of Cork drivers are maybe unlicensed. Keep those texts coming. Text 0868104106. One final one on this. I'll revisit it again. Don't you worry. It's a topic that's always raising its head. Dan, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Okay,
how are you?
You have another solution to this problem. What is it?
Well, if they can make wide bicycle lanes, why don't they bring back the trams?
The idea is to try and do that at some stage.
It's a simple solution, really. Like north, south, east and west, have them running. And even to Mahon Point as well. You know what I mean? And Blackpool Shopping Centre.
If there were trams. Yeah, we'd all be jumping on and off them. If there was always a tram 90 seconds away, you'd never bother, you know?
You see what's wrong with people? They want to go to the doors of these shopping centres. Now, I know there's a bus to my endpoint and all that, but there's a walk from, even from the bus. People don't want to do that. They want to be drive right to the door. So the trams is the system.
We had a perfectly good tram system, but it got taken out when cars and buses and trucks came along. You might see the old black and white photographs of them.
Oh, yes, and the railway lines where the tracks end up only out in India and them places.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you know what? They designed it brilliantly because it did look like, it almost looked like a cross, you know, north, south, east, and two going east, actually, on the north channel and the south channel. It was quite extensive, the tram network.
I mean, when they done that as a start, they got it right first time. No matter what we do, Jesus, it's a disgrace, actually.
Tore it all up.
I mean, look at the mess that I have to make in the George Longtown Road. Look at the width of the footpath there. And if there's two trucks passing on the road now, they can hardly pass.
Yeah, they need to get working on resurfacing a lot of those roads. Yeah, yeah. Trams, we had them, and hopefully we'll get them back again. Thanks for that. Text 0868-104-106. Back after the break.
Talk to Neil Prendeville now. 0818-104-106. Cork's Red FM.
Yes, indeed. Get involved in the conversation, I should say. And indeed, an opportunity now to delve back into my hamper of emails for our Paddy Box hampers. Remember, you can also send a Paddy Box hamper yourself. Check them out online, thepaddybox.com, from about €39 upwards. Our hampers are worth somewhere in the region of €70 to €80 each, but you still have plenty time to send one of your own Paddy Box hampers overseas to a loved one that won't be home for Christmas. We'll be shipping boxes of Irish goodness, and indeed, they will include Tanora. Not just that, potato, cheese and onion, big box of them, Barry's Tea, Cadbury's Dairy Milks, Jacob's Club Milks, Jacob's Chocolate Kimberleys, Fig Rolls, Boland's Custard Creams, loads of the old school sweets, like Refreshers and Stingers and Wham Bars and Macaroons and what have you, Oatfield Emerald Caramels, McDonald's Curry Sauce, Spice Bag Mix, Tanora, Ballymaloe Relish, and lots more besides. That's what's inside in our hampers. So further details, if you want to send your own, thepaddybox.com. I'd like to put my sister Niamh forward for a fab hamper. She moved to Perth at 29. She's been there for 5 years now. She's hairdressing, made a life for herself, and she met her partner Nick, an Englishman, who she has introduced to the very famous Tanora, which he now loves. Unfortunately, she hasn't been home for 3 years due to COVID and is missing home. We have video calls so she can be in touch with my other sister and our nieces and nephews. I know she would love the taste of home this Christmas. It would bring extra cheer. I'm sure their dog Griff would also get a taste of Cork. Fingers crossed that you read this out and maybe she might be lucky. Thanks for reading. Love the show. Kept me entertained throughout the year. Thank you, Ciarán. It's very kind of you. We'd like you to send a box of goodness to our daughter Niamh and her partner Sean, who've been living in Vancouver for 3.5 years. They won't be home this Christmas. They're expecting their first baby or third grandchild in May. We'll miss her loads as she's the life and soul of the party. Of course, we will have FaceTime, but a little piece of Cork would go a long way, says Carol Harrington in Beaumont. A few lines to see if you could send one of your Paddy Box hampers to Amanda and Niamh in Perth. They're my daughters in Western Australia. This Christmas will be lonely for myself and my wife Caroline, as it will be our first Christmas alone in 36 years. Amanda and her now husband left Cork in the summer of 2010 for a one-year working holiday in Perth. 12 years later, they're still there. They have full residency, they're homeowners, and they have beautiful kids, Charlie, Aria, and Millie. They were all in Cork this summer and enjoyed it immensely. Charlie reckoned our weather was better than Perth. The weather was perfect then during the summer for their four-week stay. This October, my other daughter, Niamh, and boyfriend, Thomas, went to Perth for hopefully 1 year. You know, so many have gone. Niamh celebrated her 21st birthday on the 1st of November, her first birthday not at home. So myself and my wife, Caroline, are going to see them in March of 2023, and it can't come fast enough. If they got one of your hampers, they would be so happy on Christmas morning. If you ask Aria her favourite food, she will always pick potato, cheese and onion. One last thing. Please wish Amanda, Anthony, Niamh, Thomas, Charlie, Aria and Millie a happy Christmas. We'll see them in March. And that's from Liam Condon. And staying with Australia, who's this one from? Valerie Lynch. She says, I have a sister in Sydney, Mary O'Sullivan, originally from Parklands, Came home, got married in July to Paul Lingwood in Ballinlock. They have a son who's three and all excited for Santy. Mary is so missed here in Cork. Kind, loving, caring, in contact all the time. Boy, does she miss her Barry's tea and the purple snack. Well, we've got purple snacks and Barry's tea inside in the hamper. My other sister, Eva, also lives in Australia with her family, but she will travel to see her in Coffs Harbour this Christmas. So it'll be nice for the family to have a Christmas hamper from home. Please pick them from their big sis. They call me the Queen, Valerie Lynch. There's lots of other ones. If I could just maybe take time to do one or two more. Love to nominate my son, Kevin, for one of your hampers. Moved to Birmingham 6 years ago. And in that time, he hasn't been home for Christmas. He was supposed to arrive on the 22nd to spend Christmas with us, but unfortunately, he just started a new job, so he had to cancel. Wouldn't it be very special if you considered him for one of your hampers, especially the Barry's tea and the tato? And that's from Angela. Morning, this is John Murphy, originally from Farranree, but living in Boston. I'm actually 50 miles south of Boston, in the sticks. There are no Irish products here in Boston, in Bellingham anyway. I've never been home for Christmas in 17 years over here. This year, my wife and kids and I are traveling back to where my wife is from, Nova Scotia in Canada. We're driving straight shot, 16 hours in the car from Bellingham to Judique, only stopping to eat and use the bathroom. I would love one of your paddy box hampers for the road trip. And we can share the remains of it with our family in Judique. I listen to your podcast daily, to and from work. Keep up the great work, says the great John Murphy, originally from Farranree, now in Bellingham in Boston. Keep them coming, lads. A little later on this morning, we'll start picking winners, and then right across the week, more emails and winners as well. So if you want to get involved, you still have time to send me an email. If you're overseas or you have loved ones overseas, email neil@redfm.ie. Thank you so much. More on that throughout the course of the morning. Back to the phone lines we go, though. Jonathan, good morning.
Hello.
I have photographs here and videos sent by you of a mobile home. It's not a mobile home, actually. What would you call it? It's like a converted...
It's a prefab,
Kind of like a converted prefab, isn't it? It's manky. Yeah, it's no disrespect to you now, but it's manky.
It's absolutely ridiculous. It's appalling, to be honest.
How did you end up in one of those?
Sorry? To be honest, I was actually in a caravan. It was maybe, I'd say, over 90% better, to be honest. The caravan that I actually had to sacrifice, I was told that if I didn't sacrifice it, I was going to end up at the side of the street with it, and I was going to have a criminal record.
So why did you end up having to live in a caravan on the street?
See, I became homeless because my parents actually are deceased, and I had no one to turn to when I turned the age of 18. And
so, no family home or anything like that, no?
No, see, I was bouncing from friends' couches to all over the place. Then I was offered a place in the Simons. And my girlfriend was offered a bed in Edel House. My girlfriend took the bed in Edel House. And to be honest, I was going from friends all over the place.
Yeah.
And I went away and I went to work then for a while. And I went away and I got myself a caravan.
Did you work from Simon or what?
No, I was actually just working cash in hand. Yeah. I was just whatever could come by, you know.
Fair play, yeah. Yeah.
And
so you managed to save up to buy a second-hand caravan, was it?
Yeah, I got a second-hand caravan that time, and I went away anyway, and I was parked up, and a gentleman that I knew, he actually gave me a loan of a piece of land for temporary, because he was actually planning on selling it. So I was living in that piece of land for a temporary bit of time.
Was this in an urban area or a rural area, city?
It was actually a rural area there outside Blarney.
All right.
It was out towards Grenier area.
So did someone come knocking on the caravan and say, you have to go, is it?
See, the people who actually owned the property, they had to sell the property, and I was still inside of it. And so I informed the council. I was on to the council months beforehand. I told them I had no washing facilities, I had no electricity, I had no nothing. And which I didn't, like, I had, we were struggling, like, we were very bad now, to be honest, that time.
Yeah.
Awful, like, we were getting water from the local church and stuff. And, like, I informed the council of the situation that I was in, and I told them that I have no other choice to go park out in the road because the person who I was sold.
Yeah. So you moved the caravan out onto a main road.
Yeah, so okay. I had to tell him I had no other choice. Like, I was going to have to pull it onto a main road, and the council didn't. I mentioned that there was a place down in West Cork. I said, well, I'm going to pull my caravan down there. And they told me that basically that they have modern homes down in Clonakilty, in the place that I was actually mentioning. So I said, yeah, I said, well, me and my girlfriend being more than interested in the modern homes, I said, and we'll go forward about it, I said.
Are these modern homes or modular?
Well, these are supposed to be modular. Modern homes.
Okay. Modular. Yeah. I know the ones, yeah. They're building them down in Mahon for Ukrainian refugees. Yeah.
Well, their ones and my one, they were two different things.
But you didn't get a modular home. You got a prefab, and it's manky.
Yeah, I got a prefab, is right, and it's absolutely, it's minging. Like, I wouldn't put a dog inside of it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's covered in mould and rust and rotting floors and dripping pipes and everything.
We can't even store food in here. Like, the food is actually going mouldy, to be honest.
Yeah, the walls are rotting off and everything.
It's absolutely disgraceful. And we went to the council when we got the property, and the council didn't even show us what property we were getting here inside the site. And they told us, here's our keys, whatever else.
So have they got a site full of these prefabs where people are living?
There's only two prefabs inside the site that I'm actually in at the minute. And I told the council, I said, is there any chance that I could bring my caravan with me? I said, they told me, no, you cannot bring your caravan because it's a fire hazard. And so I wasn't allowed to take my keys unless I sort my caravan.
Okay. We'll give you the prefab if you sell the caravan. So you sold the caravan.
Yeah, basically. So I went away and I sold the caravan. I was in the back of the car with my girlfriend for 2.5 weeks after. And we're still waiting on news. We got the news.
So you're sleeping in the car for 20 days.
Yeah, and we got the news then that basically to come down to Clonakilty to collect our keys. Came down to collect our keys, and, well, basically we were told that we were not allowed to bring our caravan and everything else, so I actually had to sell it, and I was put in a situation where I was in the back of a car. Yeah. I couldn't turn nowhere else, so I had to take the keys. I had no other choice. And so when I came down into the facility, I was absolutely gobsmacked. I was absolutely shocked. Like, with the conditions that I was left in, the mould is everywhere. Like, the heaters, there was only one heater actually working at the moment. And, like, it's actually appalling. I only got this for property a month ago. Like,
were you told that it was new?
I was told that it was supposed to be freshly renovated. It was supposed to be treated and renovated. And, like, I was told near enough that it was supposed to be new. And,
I think it's the height of disrespect to put people's families into these things.
Like, there is two prefabs in here, you see, and me and my girlfriend were a couple, you see, and the lady next door, she's actually a single girl. She got the larger prefab, you see, and we were supposed to keep we were told by one of their staff members, but they're trying to say differently now, we were told by one of their staff members that basically we're supposed to go into the other prefab and we're supposed to keep this one for storage. So,
were they?
Yeah, because there wasn't enough space to store anything, you see, because we can't even store our clothes in here, like.
How many bedrooms has it got? How many converted bedrooms?
It's got one bedroom. And
sure, I mean, if it was decent, you might say something if it was new or decent, because there's only two of you. But
so they want us to store our clothes out in the shed, Neil.
It's rather inhumane to put people in. I just didn't know they were now putting people. And were you reared? Because I think your traveller background, is that right?
I am, okay. Neil. But and I wasn't. I was reared in houses most of my life.
Grand, I was going to ask you that. Okay.
I had no other choice to be reared at on the road after my mother and father died, because I had nowhere else to turn to, did you get me?
Yeah. Were you not allowed to stay in the family home after your parents died? They must have died very young, do they?
We never had a family home. My mother died at 36.
God almighty. How did she die so young?
She had cancer. It spread it from her ovaries. Spread it to the rest of her body.
And your dad, did he die young as well?
My dad died when I was 2 years of age.
Oh my God. Did family members look after you? Were you in foster care or what?
Well, I was living with my eldest brother for a while, but it didn't really work out with him either. He actually became homeless himself. With everything that was going on. And yeah, the council was well aware of my situation, and my girlfriend as well, she was actually in care herself.
Oh, for God's sake. Did you ever have difficulty trying to get work?
I did now, Neil. I'm after trying to get work many times, but like every time I'm trying to get it, it's just not working out for me. I've only just moved down here into this area as well, like, so it's difficult with everything what's going on.
Your background's construction, isn't it?
Yeah, my background is construction. And like with everything what's going on, my mental health is all over the place as well. with my girlfriend and with everything what's going on at home as well. Like, so I'm actually, in a predicament where I don't know what to do at the minute.
Is it is that all prefab? Is it cold and drafty and
freezing? It's absolutely freezing.
Ugh, God.
My girlfriend actually put down brand new bedding. The first week we moved in, we got all brand new bedclothes and stuff. A week later, she was changing the bedding to wash it, and it was all mouldy. The bedclothes was actually green, and they were all brand spanky new out of done stores.
Did you apply for a freedom of information request?
No, I actually didn't.
Okay, because I have one here in front of me.
Like, I was only informed of certain things. Like, I had to get onto TVG as well.
Did TVG apply for freedom of information?
No, but they could go about it for me. See, like, they have been an awful help now since I've got them on my case with the council and stuff, because the council is not really listening to me. They actually asked my girlfriend to go away and get a bottle of bleach and a Brillo pad and start scrubbing the mould off the walls.
Yeah.
So, like, what kind of karma is that, like, Neil?
I think that there's another caller, actually, I'm being told in my ear now, who did apply for a Freedom of Information Act request in similar circumstances to you, to look at the amount of international protection orders that we have in the country of people who've come in from overseas between January and August 2022. And there's a breakdown of nationalities. The point being that they would be put in much better facilities than, say, the likes of yourself and your girlfriend.
Yeah, it's an absolute, it's appalling. Like, it's like, for a young couple, we're only starting out, and like, we've yet to have kids and stuff. And like, if we did have kids, I'd say, by the looks of it, we're going to be left in this, because I was told that I have no other options. It's not like I have a criminal record.
What would be great? If you could get a job, right?
From my previous landlord, I actually was renting a property, and he actually sold the house as well.
I know, I don't dispute that. I know that. I'm sure you're a lovely guy.
But still, though, like, I still have a very good background. It's not like I am from a travelling background, but still, like, I have top range background, like history. I have Garda Betting and everything. Like, it's not like I'm an old alcoholic or something like that.
I know.
The way I've been treated, like,
you've had a tough life of it, and you just don't seem to get a break. But you know, if your background is in construction, and if you could get yourself a job, because they're crying out for people in construction, you could pretty much walk on to any building site now. You know, can you not get a start? Maybe start the journey yourself to better things.
Yeah. See, Neil, I was planning on putting a caravan or a mobile home in here, and they told me that I wasn't allowed to, and they told me that basically that the facilities that they provided with me would last up to 10 years.
They will, mate. That will not last 10 years. That thing is a wreck.
And know how much these facilities cost, Neil?
I wouldn't give you $500 for it.
€25,000.
Yeah, because you'd put them on sites for an office if you were selling secondhand cars.
I've often worked in sites, and I've often walked into these.
I use them as a canteen on a building site.
I've seen them in better condition, to be honest, in better condition, and that's on the workplace.
But what are you going to do to better your own life? That's what I'm asking. What are you going to try and do to make things better?
I was thinking about going away and just going back to work and trying to go away and get a mobile home and put it in here altogether. But then I'd be fighting the council as well, and then I'd be going against my breaches with the council, and that's not looking good for me then either, you see. So, like, I actually don't know what to do with them, because, like, they're trying to say, when I do speak up for myself about the mould and everything else, they're trying to say that I'm kind of aggressive.
You're aggressive?
I'm aggressive.
You don't sound aggressive to me. I mean, maybe you might get a little bit angry because of the situation you find yourself in, that from the age of two, you lost your parents, you've been bounced from pillar to post and can't get a break, marginalised because you remember.
There wasn't no issues with storage or anything like
that. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do to better yourself?
I'm going to try to get myself better anyway. I don't know, I think I might go away and just leave out of these facilities. But then if I leave the facilities, I'm going to be put back on 5-year list, like, to get me.
I know it. You'd be. But what about a job? What about picking yourself up by your bootstraps, getting a job, getting good money in construction, and two fingers to the council and drive on yourself?
Yeah. It's just an awful lot of going on in my head there lately. My mental health is very unstable.
I see. Okay, you're not in a position. I hope that improves.
Yeah, to be honest.
Do you mind, because to be self-sufficient is a very important link in the chain to move forward, you know? So I hope that you, I hope you improve in that area, so you're capable of going out and, you know, making a living and getting a job. In the meantime, do you mind if I send those photographs to the county council and ask them the question as to why they're putting Irish people and
And like what I don't see, Neil, like there is people being put into these accommodations, Irish people, and we're all suffering, and we're looking at this on the internet of all these people, all these Ukrainian people. I know that they are going through certain circumstances now at the minute, but like they are getting modernised homes, homes worth even 90 grand upwards. Like, and looking,
they probably would be allocated one of the modular homes, which really are pretty much like proper three beds. You know, they're different. They're not a converted prefab that you'd have on a building site for a canteen.
Did you get the link that I sent you, Neil, of the video of their actual...
I'll have a look at the video when I get off air, but we'll certainly pass it on and ask them the question, is this what we've come to now, that we're sending Irish people to these kind of converted prefabs that are...
And like my neighbour, Jesus Christ, her heaters is actually falling off the walls and stuff as well next door.
Like,
they're saying that this is okay, like, and we can't speak up for ourselves. Like, we've been in the council there several times now, like, and the council just... They really don't want to deal with us.
All right.
Because, like,
okay.
We are home.
Let's see what they have to say on the matter. Thanks for getting in touch, though. I'll be back to you, Jonathan. Thanks for now. Text 0868104106. Lads, back after 11.
Hey, it's Dave. Join me weekdays from 4 for Dave Max Drive, where I'll help get you home or give you a little lift at home. Big hits, loads of fun features and traffic info. What more could you need? Join me weekdays from 4. Dave Max Drive.
104 to 106. Red FM. This is the Neil Prendeville Show.
And we have turkeys and hams to give away right across this week, sometime between now and midday today. Jim Crowley Butchers, Mill Road, Middleton have given us some of their beautiful spice beef during the week, and I tried all of that. It's beautiful, so they do the spice beef, but we've got the ham and the turkey to give away every day, as well as that Fundamania Christmas Village opens on the 16th at the Tremor Road. You know where it is, just opposite Musgrave Park there. It's a one-stop entertainment destination. There's food stalls there, all of the thrilling rides. You also get Fawcett Circus and the Fundamania Christmas Village as well. So we have family passes between now and midday. You're listening out for a Christmas song. Massive response this morning to issues regarding the chaos of trying to drive around the city and the suburbs in Dunkettle. A selection of them include, I travel through the city each morning at approximately 7 a.m. to go to work. I dread approaching traffic lights, particularly from the junction at the Elysian towards Penrose Wharf and onto the old Coliseum. The amount of drivers that break red lights is frightening. Driver behaviour of people in the city is shocking, says Peter. Have to say myself that I notice an awful lot more people breaking or racing red lights. I think the system creates that. I mean, it shouldn't be done. It's reckless and it's dangerous, but you can kind of understand why you see a lot more of that kind of carry on, because of traffic chaos and long, long traffic delays. Where's your man going with his €8 fare? The minute you get into a taxi, the meter says nearly a tenner. When was the last time him or you got into a taxi, says John? Only a few weeks ago, actually, funnily enough. And when you sit into a taxi, the meter is nowhere near €10. I know it's gone up, the fare when you sit in, but they were entitled to that increase because it's so low. You know, taxi drivers need a break, you know, they really do. I don't know what it would be when you sit in now. Would it be around maybe €4 or something like that, 3.80 or €4 before you pull off? Can you ask all Audi drivers to please use their indicators? I will. Audi drivers, please use your indicators. I actually always thought it was BMW drivers were the ones that ignore... I better shut up. Zip it. I blame traffic lights in the city. I drive a lot, especially at rush hour. There is no flow in traffic because of traffic lights. A big surge of traffic will come through the lights, but the lights up ahead are red, with another line of traffic sitting there. So that causes a massive backup. I blame whatever the lights, or whatever way the lights are set at. Another one. If they had delivered the park and rides all over the suburbs as promised by the Greens, we wouldn't have the mess we're in now. Typical Irish politicians putting the cart before the horse, not a brain cell between them. Bring back the days of the horse and carriage. The problem with Dunkettle is the right lane through the tunnel is for the M8 only. Yeah, you know, the right now is where the left used to be, and the left now is where the right used to be, and hence all of the confusion. Texter says, it's ridiculous. The right lane is empty all the time, with big queues in the left lane. Both lanes take you east. It's astonishing that they designed it this way. Looking at the cameras at any time of the day, you will see it for yourself. I come through the tunnel between 3:30, 3 going home. I drive through the right and go all the way around the roundabout and then just take the east exit without delay instead of queuing for Mahon. I hope you can picture that, lads, because I have difficulty following it. But thank you, Eric, all of the same. I'm assuming you're not breaking any laws doing that. With regards to the traffic conversation, with all the traffic cams around town, why can't fines be sent out to people who block yellow boxes from their reg? That would make people rethink what they're doing. That's just a selection to... You can text and get involved in the conversation yourself. Text 0868104106. Jonathan.
Neil,
I confused my Jonathans earlier on. Two Jonathans, one living in a manky prefab, and you who requested a freedom of information question to be answered. Isn't that right?
That's correct, yeah, to the Department of Justice, Neil.
And you got the response. Firstly, why did you do it and what did you want to know?
Well, it kind of started with an interview there that Grit did with Ben Scallon. About this guy from Egypt in London, and he was living in London for 15 years, and he heard about Helen McEntee's amnesty for refugees, so he decided to come over to Ireland and apply to for asylum under that amnesty. But he was living in London for 15 years, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
And working in London.
Yeah, okay.
So, like, I said to myself, you know, this is a bit strange. How is he fleeing a war in the UK if he's been there for 15 years? And he's from Egypt as well, so there was no war in Egypt at that particular time when I seen the interview. So I just thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to send in an FOI here to see all the nationalities that are coming into Ireland under this International Protection Act.
And this is separate now to people coming from Ukraine fleeing war. That is a separate figure.
That is a separate thing, yeah, 100%. Okay. I'll get that clear. That is completely separate, yeah.
So that would be somebody who would come here with their passport or not, arrive at an airport and say, I need international protection because I'm coming from a country where there is persecution or war or whatever.
Exactly, yeah, 100%, yeah.
That's and they're allowed into the country where their application is being processed.
Yeah, no, as I said, the International Protection Act 2015, no, I don't know how relevant that act is, no, with European legislation, but in that act, the International Protection Act, Neil, section 15, if you read the first section of that, it basically says if you arrive at the frontier of the state or in the state, whether lawfully or unlawfully, you can apply for international protection. So, but the second part of that legislation, that act, is section 15B, which says if you arrive at the frontier of the state, whether lawfully or unlawfully, and you have children with you, you can claim responsibility for those kids, which I found a bit disturbing, to be honest with you. And
Why is that disturbing?
Well, it's what it basically says, Neil, that anybody can arrive at the state in Ireland with children that are not yours, and you're saying
possibly,
you know,
possibly
I'm responsible for these kids, you know, and it's that's
so,
just the kind
so
of
if one. somebody arrived with a child, for instance, and none of them had paperwork or documentation, your fear that there could be a trafficking issue there.
Exactly. Okay. No, I'm not saying there is, Neil.
I know.
But I'm just saying they're potentially...
No, and I wouldn't allow you to say that without proof. You're saying potentially. But
exactly.
That's not such a big issue because the Freedom of Information Act was answered and you got a figure of 8,893 human beings came into the country under the protection order, of which only 837 were children.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which is fair enough. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, but what's very interesting is twice as many men versus females came in under the protection order.
Yeah. And I think, Neil, as well, like, I mean, when you look at the list of the countries there, like, I mean, in fairness, the top one here, right, I'm just looking at there now, is Georgia, 1,793. And to my knowledge, there is no war in Georgia. And look, I'm not saying these people have been persecuted, but what I'd like to know is, like, you know, we keep hearing Roger O'Gorman going, they're fleeing war. Well, there is no war in Georgia. That's a fact. So what I'd like to know is, why are they fleeing? And Georgia, because, like, there is no war in Georgia. I mean, look, some of the lists, some of the names there, okay. You've even got the United
Georgia.
States of America there, Neil, and the UK. These are the nationalities. Like, I think it's, what is it, like seven people for United States of America.
That's Mickey Mouse, though. Seven people. I wouldn't be.
I know, Neil, but it kind of shows you. I mean, why would you be fleeing the United States of America, to be fair? I don't know, like, you know, I'm just seeing what I'm looking at here now, like, you know, and some other countries here, let's read them out. Like, you've got Russia, India, Turkey, Kenya, Bolivia, Eritrea, Uganda, Nicaragua, Malaysia, Nepal, Angola, Cameroon, Yemen, Venezuela, Jordan, Tunisia, Belarus.
Just for the record, you do know that they may not have come from those countries, but that would be their nationality. They are from those countries.
That's exactly it. All the countries listed here are the nationalities of these people.
Not necessarily. So, they could have come from the UK, or they could have come from France.
Exactly. But the funny thing about all of that is that the Department of Justice are not statistically saving the countries they're coming from. So it says it in the FOI there that they don't save that down.
Right. That's interesting. Did you ask for the countries of embarkation?
Yes, 100%, Neil. I asked them for what nationalities they were and what country they came from. Not particularly like their nationality, but what country did they
arrive
set off from?
Arrive
yeah, exactly,
from.
Okay. Exactly, Neil. I know.
Okay. And did you find it? Okay, so you break down the top 10: 1,793 from Georgia, 1,239 Somalia, 1,000 from Algeria, 728 Zimbabwe, and the figure decreases. Yep. Then Nigeria, Afghanistan, Ukraine, South Africa, Botswana, Egypt, Pakistan, Albania. What if all of them, twice as many men as women, but what if all of them come over here and they get jobs?
Yeah. Well, look, Lee, I suppose, like, that's a fair point. That is a very fair point, as I said to your...
That they're not freeloaders, they're not welfare tourists, that they want to work a lot of the time in the jobs that we don't want to do ourselves.
Yeah, but I think, Neil, that's a fair point. I will take that point. That is a fair point. And, like, as I said, you know, I worked with a guy there for 3.5 years, Robbie. He's from Bangladesh. He came here legally. And, you know, he's living here now, he's a wife, kids, and he's working in Ireland. That's perfectly fine. All I'm saying, Neil, is that if people are coming in here illegally, then it needs to be stopped. That, like, I'm not against people fleeing war or what have you, you know, but we really need to start getting, because when you think about it, Neil, I don't know how many graduates we have every year from college, right? And no, we've got a serious housing shortage. Now, if those kids want to finish college, get a house in Ireland and work, they're probably not going to be able to do it now.
Forget about it. So no, like, they're legging it. The stats this morning saying that you're going to see an awful lot more go in the new year. So anyway, the point is, if you've 8,893 in 10 months, where are they going to live? Where's the state going to put them?
I tell you, Neil, like, that's exactly it, Neil. We need balance here, and it's fairly rational to say that, and it's not racist to say it or anything like that, you know. It's logical, rational thinking we need to start doing here, because we're no kind of, like, you know, there's going to be Irish kids missing out on the situation where they want to work in their own country, get a house in their own country and have a family, but they're now going to be possibly forced out of their own nation.
And how do you feel then, people say that's racist to others would seem as a logical statement to make, that there isn't enough places for people to live?
I would say if someone says that's racist, they're not thinking rationally. And I'm just going to say that. I don't mean to be rude to anybody or anything, but if you're saying...
There's one here now. Why do you keep giving racists airtime? They've all got issues with people coming in and no issues with the government. See,
I've no issue with... Like, Neil, the town I'm from there, but I pass refugees every day and I say hello to them. There's no problem. No one's hurting refugees or calling them names or anything like that. Yes, the government are 100% responsible for this. Like, and I believe immigration needs to be tightened in all our airports, in all our ports, and just to stop people that are coming here pretending they're fleeing war when they're not seeing war.
Gotcha,
and I'm not saying all of them are doing that.
Are you, but you aren't saying that we should close down international protection to people, but the vetting should be tighter and, you know... How can the vetting be tighter if you don't allow them in to vet them? Like, do you just close the doors then, or what?
Well, it's. I think, Neil, it's people are throwing their passports in the toilet on airplanes and then landing here. And I find it a bit kind of strange that they're not logging the countries these people are coming from. You know what I mean? It just seems to me, I don't know, it just seems a bit weird to me, to be honest.
Where do they get on the plane? Yeah, they may well.
Exactly.
And why would we have, for instance, people coming from countries like Georgia or Somalia, Algeria, Albania, Pakistan, places like that? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, we can establish right here, right now, on air, there is no war in Georgia. And I'm not racist. I'm not a racist for saying that, because that's the fact.
Why do you think they come here? Do you believe they come here for dole?
I don't know. I believe, like, you know, I think Roger Gorman there was sending out, like, tweets about everybody's welcome.
You get a key to your own home in 4 months.
Yeah, I mean, like, come on, like, Neil, that's ridiculous. Like, and look, fair enough, you know, people are fleeing, but look, we need to give a chance here as well to the Irish kids.
Thanks for doing that research, because you can't argue with the statistics. You have 8,893 people with international protection orders in the state between January and August alone of this year. Add that to another similar figure next year and the year after, and you wonder where we're going.
Yeah, exactly. Look, Neil, as I said, you know, I'm just trying to get, we need a bit of balance here, and we need to have a bit of respect as well for our own Irish kids who are going to be leaving college, and you know what I mean? They want to stay here as well. So, you know, we just need a bit of balance here. That's all I'm asking
for. All right, thanks for the research. Thanks for taking the call, Jonathan. Appreciate it. Text 0868104. You can hold on if you want, actually, because I think Colette just wants to get involved in the conversation. Colette, go ahead.
Hi, Neil, how are you?
Why is it dangerous to quote statistics that are backed up by the Department of Justice?
But I mean, I think, Neil, it's not about the statistics of the Department of Justice. Let's be honest, this is a conversation about them and us. It's othering of people, which is one of the most dangerous things that you can do when you're having a conversation, unless you're being honest about it. And what he's really doing is setting up a really right-wing narrative where we're saying, oh, the problems in our country would all be fixed if it wasn't for the immigrants. Or,
when did he say that? No, actually, Colette, I have to say to you, you just said that. Nobody else said that.
But
you
he's
just
implying it. I'm being honest, and I'm saying to you that what he's doing is creating a situation where we're having a conversation where there's a subtext. Oh, I really don't mind them coming, but the but is the real conversation that we're having. And it's disingenuous to say, I know, honestly, just allow me to speak, because I did listen to everything.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually.
And
let Colette make her point.
I just want to be really honest. If you look at the rise of right-wing populism across Europe, dangerous right-wing populism across Europe, it started with conversations like these. And it started with conversations, we'll say, in Finland, Finns first. Look at all of those things where you have, you know, these conversations create a narrative where we're saying that the problems in our own country in relation to housing, in relation to education, in relation to healthcare are created and in fact exacerbated by offering, you know, sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong, refuge to people. And that's the process that has to be gone through. But we're a nation of people who've migrated ourselves. We're a nation who sought refuge in other countries. And for this conversation to be statistically based is completely and utterly disingenuous. And I think really, really upsetting, because I have people, young people who are growing up in this country. I've lived in other countries myself. I've been an immigrant. And the one thing that I would say is that the othering of other people, and that is genuinely the creating of a them and us scenario. We're all human beings. We all come from
but
somewhere.
But you know the logic that you chat to me with. Are you looking far enough ahead in that logic as to where
I am
we're like driving in the dark with the headlights off?
I know the type of society that I want to be part of,
right.
And I don't want to be part of a society that's based on right-wing principles where we separate out people.
But why do you use terms like
because it
right-wing,
is right-wing
and
I think Neil, if you go off and you look at the rise of Viktor Orban, he said all of these things in Hungary, and look at what he's doing now. If you look at the rise of the right-wing parties in what we would consider
Italy.
To be really liberal countries like Scandinavia, Sweden, Finland, all of those countries, what did they do? They started with this. You play on the fears of people. We know that people are without
Cork County Council. Cork County Council built 141 homes in the first 10 months of this year. That's just Cork County Council alone. Where is everybody going to live? Why are we seeing half of under 30s are thinking of emigrating if they
and
haven't
I have
gone already?
In my own house. That's not the conversation. But, no, but the conversation shouldn't be.
But you need to look ahead as to what are the reasons why our young people are leaving the country.
But can I ask you the question, Neil? Why do we have to base it on immigration?
I'm not.
Why do we have to base it? But we are. What the conversation you're having this morning is that we had 8,000 people come in since last August, which is going to make the housing problem
since January.
Worse. And what we should be saying, what we should be saying to policymakers and what we should be saying to our politicians is that they should be building housing. In general, it's not a question of, the fact of the matter is we have a housing crisis regardless of whether these 8,000 people come in or not. But are we now a nation of people who are going to look inwards and we're going to create...
No, I'm not one of them. But I have to have some sort of balance. And I think that there are logical arguments on both sides. And if somebody says to me... So let me just give you a number then. 75,000 Ukrainians fleeing war. Not every single one of those would lead housing because some of them are families with children. I accept that. Okay? Notwithstanding the amount of people who are already here and have applications for residency. But if you now have an additional, and in fairness, at least Jonathan did the research and they come up with a figure of just under 9,000 people here have come into the country under international protection orders from countries where there's no war. Many of them have destroyed their documentation. What's wrong with asking questions about that?
But it's not about asking a question about that. You're missing the point that I'm trying to make to you. I'm saying that that's a reasonable conversation that we need to have about how do we provide housing for everybody. But when you start saying, you know, 8,000 people came in, we need to look after our own first. We're creating an idea that citizenship and the type of citizens that we are is exclusive.
But it's not about looking after our own first. It's about if you want to go to another country. I mean, you make the point of Irish people who went abroad. None of them entered countries illegally, and they all went to work.
There's a lot of Irish people arrived in Ellis Island and the like, and they didn't have jobs, and they looked for salvation, and they looked for help. That's our history. But that's the point that I'm trying to say to you, is that you're creating this idea that we're just looking at statistics and we're saying, gosh, isn't that interesting? Well, really, there's another group of people who are hearing it differently, and who are hearing it's a them and us scenario, and it's not a them and us scenario. Yes, we need to completely challenge Cork County Council to build housing for anybody who needs a house and who legitimately needs refuge in this country.
Okay.
And some of the people who come through those processes are legitimately, there isn't a war in Georgia, but there is persecution. There are people who will have a landing point as the UK when they came here, but they've come from somebody completely differently.
Why if there's persecution in all those countries, is there twice as many males arriving here as females?
Those are questions that the Department of Justice has to answer. And in some cases, it can be that they're the people who are able to travel. It isn't necessarily that, or they can be choosing that they don't want to participate.
But why, if there's persecution, would families not be coming here? If there's 9,000 arrived since January, and of them, only 837 were kids.
But only 837 arrived here have kids. It doesn't mean that they haven't gone to other countries.
No, 837 kids arrived.
That arrived here.
Yeah.
That's 10% of the figure that you quoted.
Yeah, yeah.
But ask yourself the question, and this is the thing, if we want to have an honest conversation about how we treat people who arrive in this country
we need to treat everybody well, but I just feel for people who wonder about housing and how we're going to solve it and why our young people can't get a home. Nobody's looking further down, that's all I'm saying. You need to look further down.
Okay. We aren't providing housing regardless of these people. We aren't providing. The housing that's being built by Cork Corporation at the moment is not being allocated to these people. Let's be honest.
So the modular homes in Mahon are being built right now to house Ukrainian refugees.
For Ukrainian refugees, honestly, Neil, for Ukrainian refugees. Like, we can see what's happening in Ukraine. And most of the Ukrainians who are coming here are looking for work, are working.
There's about 15,000-16,000 of them working. I've got all that stat. I have all of that on the air. It's all out there to see. A lot of them are working.
All I'm saying is, if you create in people's minds this idea that it's them and us, it's fundamentally...
No, it's not them and us. Some people might say them and us, but others would say... Others are just saying, okay, how will we cope?
Your previous, can I just say to you, the Jonathan who did
right,
the research,
jump back in. I have back more to say.
Came back with those figures. He said, we need to look after our own first. He said that.
Do you say that, Jonathan? Do you believe that?
I did. Do you know what? Listen, Claire, okay, let's get a couple of things very clear here, okay? You basically said, I'm a far-right extremist, correct? Is that kind of correct, yeah? You implied that I'm a far-right. Let me get one thing straight.
Somebody says you're a right-wing scumbag, actually, Jonathan.
I didn't say that.
Okay, so, right, Colette, let me speak. No, you spoke there now for the last 5 minutes. Can I speak?
Perfect.
Good. Thanks very much. Okay, Colette, I'm friends with a man from Bangladesh and I worked with him for 3.5 years, right? His name is Robbie. And you know what he calls me, Colette? Bandu. And I call him Bandu. And you know what Bandu means? It means friend in Bangladeshi. So don't start with the far-right racist card, okay? Because I'm not going to listen to it, okay?
But there is a narrative out there. I've seen the placards and the
there
posters.
Of course there is,
but you can't employ...
Irish first.
You can't be saying everybody who asks a question about this is a far-right extremist. It's outrageous. No, can I speak? You keep talking over me there. Can I just speak, please?
On to what you said, and what I'm trying to say to you is that I didn't call you a racist, and I understand what you said, but I'm saying if you think the subtext to it heard by other people, which is what I also said, it can be interpreted as, oh, hang on a minute, it's them and us.
You did say we have to look after our own first, though.
We did.
Okay, look, Colette, are you aware of the International Protection Act 2015?
I actually am.
Section 15. Can I speak, please?
Fine, please do, because I lose the run of it otherwise. Yeah, go on.
I didn't speak over you, Claire, okay? So please be quiet for 2 seconds. Thank you very much. Right. Section 15 of the International Protection Act says, if you arrive at the state, whether lawfully or unlawfully, you can apply for international protection. Now, in your rational, logical thinking mind, is that open to abuse? Yes or no?
Absolutely it is, but that's not what I was talking to you
good.
About.
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you, is that we need to look into this deeper and to basically sort out the people who are coming.
And why does the International Protection Office not keep statistics of where applicants actually arrived from?
That's a great question, Neil, that the Department of Justice needs to answer immediately. Because I don't believe them, quite honestly.
Okay.
So, can I say to you, Jonathan, what I'm trying to say to you is, right, the International Protection Act has huge flaws. All sorts, and including everything that enables people to establish refugee status in this country, has flaws. There's no doubt about it. There are people who legitimately come here as refugees, and there are people who abuse the system. We all are aware of that.
Listen, let her finish.
I am in full agreement with you, but I am saying to you, we need to be very careful in how we actually speak, so that when people hear it, they don't hear the opposite of what you might be trying to achieve. You might be trying to legitimately say, hang on a second, we're not adequately meeting our obligations under the International Protection Act by gathering statistics, by making sure people are legitimate, all of those different things. That's a legitimate concern. But by connecting it to housing and where people are going to go and the difficulties that we have within our own society, regardless of where that sort of immigration,
you've made the point.
I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
Okay, can I just... Well, that's your interpretation of what he's trying to say. Can I just ask you a question? Can I just ask you a question? should it be completely and utterly, I know it's unlimited and will never be capped for Ukrainian war refugees, I understand that. Everybody that arrives at a port or an airport in Ireland should be allowed to come in, whether documented or undocumented, and be processed and facilitated and accommodated while they go through that process. Is that your belief, Colette?
No, what I believe is that we should meet our obligations, but I also believe that we have to create a system that deals with people at point of entry and that deals with people legitimately and until we've established otherwise. I don't think that we should have...
Because right now it would appear that we have a policy of international protection laws for every single country in the world who arrives at a port or an airport. They are welcome.
And the question needs to be asked where, when we have a real view that there is a country where there is a war or where there is you know, persecution of individuals or any of those different things, we must meet our obligations because we would want it done for us. That's the first thing. The second thing is that we have a really, really poor record in around direct provision and all of those different things, all of which should have been done away with a long, long time ago.
Oh, no, it's fine. I'm just curious to your answers. But so it's an open country for all of the world to come and arrive with or without documentation under the International Protection Office. In fact, you can arrive here at an airport and say that you are applying for international protection. You will be facilitated with that application and you will be housed in the meantime in whatever circumstances, I don't know.
But you see, there are people legitimately coming from countries where there is legitimate harm.
I know that.
I think that we have to be really careful about that. What I'm saying to you is that not that we shouldn't have this conversation around that, but when you connect it to the social issues that we have in our own country.
But you see, you can't really disconnect them, you see, because ultimately it is about roofs over people's heads, you see, unfortunately.
But ultimately it's about different types of housing. Is all sorts of different things. You have housing for people who've come out of care systems, you have housing for families, you have housing for single people, you have housing for people with addiction issues in this country. Housing means different things to the different people who need them. My bent with all of this conversation, or the real thing that struck me as sad, was that we were othering other people. And when I say othering,
what does othering mean?
What othering to me means that it is creating, you know, the dehumanization of entire groups of people. And then that is exploited and it creates this idea of a them and us.
But it's not really about othering. If that was the case and you had 9,000 people on a housing list, right? And you say to them, sorry, we're dealing with somebody who's first on the housing list. You happen to be 8,500 on it. So isn't that disrespectful and unfair on people who are waiting to get from 8,500 to one?
No, what we're saying is,
if you're in an equal society, the 8,500 person should be treated the same as the person in the top 10.
But that's not the conversation.
You have to accept that if it's wrong in your narrative, what you describe, then people on a housing list who have to wait to get up the list, that is also dehumanizing them, othering them.
But that's not othering. Othering is a totally different thing. Othering is where you come along and you say, we're the core group of people in this society and we are, it's us first. And we are.
I never said that and I don't even believe that.
Okay, well, what I'm saying to you is that under the International Protection Act, you're talking about two different things. People on the housing list are not people who are under international protection. They're totally different things. And they're totally different needs, and there's a totally different system should be in place. But I just genuinely believe to have a conversation where we finish it off with, oh, the international protection, and we shouldn't be doing it, and the statistics are flawed. And yes, we are hugely flawed in how we deliver it. And then connected to, our own children won't have houses because of this. That's not true. Our own children won't have houses because of poor housing policies within the country. They're not the same.
And they're not connected, no?
They're not connected.
Okay, they're not. No, it's a straight question, straight answer. Thank you. Hold on if you wish, though. Hold on a second. I think I've got...
Do you believe that a migrant, so is an Irish person?
Sorry, I lost you there. Sorry, what?
Asking the question, so are we now saying that people on the list of the international protection are taking houses from Irish people? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I have no issue at all with people who want to come into this country and work from anywhere in the world whatsoever. None. Having done it myself, I have no issue with it whatsoever.
But that's what Jonathan is implying. We won't have housing for ourselves if we give it to them. Oh, that's what Jonathan is implying. And that's my issue.
No, I wouldn't say exactly to her, no, to be honest, Colette. Like, I'm just saying, anybody who is abusing the system, and I'm not saying all of them are abusing it, but it's some people are abusing this system.
I understand, because you've said it a number of times. I want to get Emma on the air. Emma, good morning. Can you hold Emma? I just have an ad break. Are you okay there for a second?
Yeah, of course, Neil.
Much obliged. Back after this.
Call the Neil Prendeville Show now. 0818 104 106. Red FM.
Just page up there, lads. My apologies to Jonathan and Colette. I gave it an awful lot of time, lads. I don't mean to be curt, but I do need to move on. Still to come this side of midday, Fundamania tickets and also the wonderful turkey and hams to give away, sorting you for Christmas dinner, courtesy of Jim Crowley Butchers, the Mill Road, Middleton. You're listening out for a Christmas song. I'll do the best to get as many on as I can. Annette was there 1 second ago and the line number is gone now, so I will talk to Emma. Emma, good morning.
Hi Neil, how are you?
I'm good. You are one of the people who's been, is it right protesting or rallying in Fermoy?
I don't think protest, maybe meeting. We've been meeting up there trying to discuss how to get councillors on board and listen to our objections to the centre. I don't think it's being articulated correctly. It's coming across.
You
as
said that you're one of them,
right,
and now everybody is calling it right wing racist narrative.
Yeah, it's going propaganda-ish. I think it's not being articulated correctly. Like, from a parent's point of view and from the parents I've spoken to at the schools, our only concern is the location of the centre. We have no objection to people coming in from other countries. Everybody has a right to make a life for them and for their children.
So why weren't you at the rally holding placards saying, Fermoy is welcoming, make this your home?
Oh, we are welcoming them. I'd be at both rallies. I'm not against people coming in.
Which one were you at? Were you at both of? Which one were you?
Both. At both. Yeah. So we do welcome the refugees. It's the location of the centre. We weren't brought in on discussions about it. And okay, I was just thinking maybe if they'd held a town meeting and got people to come in, we could have come up with an alternative location. I think parents' only concern is how close it is to the four schools.
And why is that? Why is that? Who's in the convent, do you know? Is it a majority of men, is it?
Well, there are a good few children. I think there's 26 children. There's a lot of families, and then there's a lot of single men. And obviously, do you know, with what's been going on in Fermoy over the last year, all of the assaults and things we've had by foreign nationals, and I'm not saying it's only foreign nationals that assault women.
Well, people will be annoyed with that comment all the same, though, saying just because they're from another country. You know?
Oh, no, absolutely. Obviously, Irish people assault people as well, but it's just here in Fermoy of late, the last four in a row have been Moldovan men or the likes.
I don't have to fact check, do I? That statement is correct, is it? You're saying that four serious crimes were all four non-nationals, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. The last one was only 2 weeks ago. So I think that has people on edge, obviously.
Okay.
So
parents
it's
are
not
on
that we're
edge
all
because
scared
of that.
Foreign men. We're just on edge, yeah.
Yeah. And you think that it would have been okay if it were nowhere near schools then, am I understanding it?
I think a lot of the parents would be okay if it wasn't near the school. Obviously, there's people who are coming to rallies that are racist, maybe, and do not want these people in the country. And they're completely separate to the parents' concerns,
but if you stood with that rally, then you bolster the numbers of those that are being called racist, though.
But see, the rally, when the very first evening, it was called because of the location of it, not because of who was coming in. Yeah. But then it took a different direction.
Okay. You just wanted to reiterate this is about the location, not a lack of welcome from the people.
Yeah, especially from most of the parents that I've spoken to. That's the main concern.
Okay. And you're aware that those that arrived, 66, are international protection applicants, the ones that we've been talking about, and the freedom of information request that Jonathan got, which was broken down into different countries like Georgia, Somalia, Algeria, and countries like that.
I don't really think it matters where they come from. Do you know, if they want to make a better life for themselves, it's fine by me.
Okay, good points.
My parents were Irish and I came here from the UK 11 years ago. And, do you know, I had to work for 2 years before I was entitled to claim child benefit for my child. I'm an immigrant, I suppose, myself.
And you know what, there was a statistic we came across from the Oireachtas recently. It said it's estimated that every parish in Ireland has an average of 20 undocumented Irish citizens in the USA. I think that's powerful, that every parish in Ireland, from that parish, there are 20 undocumented Irish in America.
Yeah, I believe it as well. But see, the difference is, I think when the Irish emigrated, they weren't given any support or help. Do you know, they had to know people over there to be able to keep on a couch or get a job somewhere, do you know? Now we've moved on, times have moved on, we're a bit more modernised, and I've no issue with them coming here to better themselves at all.
Okay, but the genuine fear is of families and the location to the school, that's all you're saying? That you're
I think so, personally, and from the parents I've spoken
to. All right,
thank you for that. There might be other people with other concerns.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you. Text 0868104106. Didn't get to a lot that I'd planned to do today. What else is new, says you? I had wanted to pick some hamper winners for our paddy box hampers to go overseas, but I promise you I will dedicate a lot of time to it tomorrow. But a lot of other housekeeping between now and quitting time. Jonah Lewis, Stop the Cavalry. Lines open, 0818104106. We have winners for our turkey and ham. Paul Murphy from Bellevue Lawn in Frankfield, sorted for the Christmas dinner. Well done. We might even see if we can throw in... Actually, I shouldn't say that because I only get myself in the hot water. Yeah, you get your own pop-up. Go on down to Mailer Street and pop into Hickey's and get it for yourself, Paul. Turkey and ham sorted for you. And also a Fundamania family pass. Sandra Costello from the Green and White Church. You're off to Fundamania, the big Christmas village, and free access to Fawcett Circus as well. You're going to have a great family day. Lines will stay open. Text 0868104106. Email neil at redfm.ie if you've got a story to share. Have a good day. Wrap up Warren tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow.
For more Red FM podcasts, go to redfm.ie/podcasts.